It may surprise you that Iowa ranks in the top 10 states most dependent on manufacturing. There are more than 6,000 manufacturing firms in Iowa, representing almost 11% of all employment. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We continue our summer series on Iowa towns today with a look at how manufacturing has shaped the history, economy, and education of Iowa communities. You can join our conversation. Tell us about manufacturing in your community. What is made in your town, and how has it shaped your community? Join our conversation after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it may surprise you that Iowa ranks in the top 10 states most dependent on manufacturing. There are more than 6,000 manufacturing firms here in Iowa, and they represent almost 11% of all employment in the state. And in this hour, we continue our summer series along with Talk of Iowa on Iowa towns. And today on this program, we're looking at how manufacturing has shaped the history, the economy, and the education of Iowa communities. And we'd like to have you join in our conversation with our other guests. Tell us about manufacturing in your town, in your community. What's made in your town? Perhaps you're someone who helps make it. How has that shaped the culture, the personality, the politics of your community, the landmarks? We'd like to hear about that. And in what is the future of manufacturing where you live? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can get in touch with us via Twitter at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, Dave Swenson. He's an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University, joining us from our studio in Ames. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Let's have you give us the Iowa as a whole picture. When we look at Iowa as a whole, I threw out a couple of statistics there at the beginning, but how significant is manufacturing to our state?
Manufacturing is a very, very important component of the state's economy. You know, when we ask people, what's the biggest industrial sector in Iowa, people invariably answer, it's agriculture, of course. But the fact of the matter is there's more than twice as many jobs in manufacturing in the state of Iowa. And it has a symbiotic relationship with agriculture because we process a lot of our agricultural products and agriculture demands a lot of what we make. As you stated at the outset, manufacturing in Iowa is just about 11% of Iowa jobs. But it accounts for 16.5% of the earnings that workers make in the state. And so the difference between those two percentages tells us that something we very much like, and that's manufacturing jobs pay much better than the state average. And then the last number we like to use, especially as an economist, is manufacturing explains just under about 19% of the state's GDP, its gross domestic product. And that's the standard way that we measure. So by all of these measures, manufacturing is a very, very important, and it's a potent component of the Iowa economy. Now, that's at the state level. When you move out of non-metropolitan areas and you start thinking about the medium-sized cities, the Fort Dodges and the Mason cities and the Clintons and the Keokuks, and you start thinking about those kinds of cities, those areas are even more dependent on manufacturing. And manufacturing provides the foundation for middle-class households, higher standards of living, and to a certain extent, regional economic stability.
Mm-hmm. What are some main areas of manufacturing? What are things that would get the Made in Iowa stamp?
First off is food. Food, food, food. We make all manner of food product, most especially meat slaughtering and meat products. Next of all is going to be machinery. We manufacture a wide range of machinery, not just farm machinery, but a wide range of construction machinery and other types of machinery. The third important category is going to fall into the territory of electronics. And we, for example, have Rockwell Collins out in the eastern part of the state, for example, that manufactures navigation devices and other types of instrumentation. So those are the big three categories. And food processing, far and away, is the biggest industrial manufacturing sector in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep an unusual list of things manufactured in Iowa, things that you like to raise in a gathering and say, did you know that was made in Iowa?
Not so much that, but what is important is that manufacturing isn't just a plant on the edge of town that has anywhere from 50 to 150 workers. Over half of Iowa's manufacturing firms have fewer than 10 employees. Mm. And a very, very large fraction of manufacturing firms are just simply one person outfit, somebody making something, somebody welding something, somebody either crafts or one other, you know, type of application, developing some kind of product for sale. So manufacturing is broadly defined as a lot of little people, but manufacturing narrowly defined is still a very, very important employer in the state of Iowa.
So glad to have you with us this hour. Dave Swenson of Iowa State University's Department of Economics. We'll touch back with you many times during the hour, Dave, to get some more ideas about the manufacturing, the state of manufacturing. Iowa's manufacturing profile, our focus this hour on River to River. Joining us now, someone who knows a lot about the history of manufacturing in a major manufacturing center in Iowa, that would be Cedar Rapids, and joining us to talk about that, Mark Stopher Hunter. He's a local historian specializing in Cedar Rapids history in our Iowa City studio. Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
Give us an overview. How long of a history does manufacturing and Cedar Rapids go back?
Cedar Rapids manufacturing on a very large scale goes back to the early 1870s, and there was always kind of a mindset going on in the early days of Cedar Rapids development that it wasn't going to be just a medium-sized city. It was going to be a large-scale manufacturing center, and the transportation networks that were developed were designed to accommodate those. And it was that decade of the 1870s where Cedar Rapids manufacturing really took hold, and there was some large companies, a meat processing plant. What became the Quaker Oats Company began at that time, and by 1880, a dairy packaging company, now known as Evergreen in Cedar Rapids, but known as the Cherry Company at that time, really kind of took hold in the community. Mm-hmm. And they set the standards for the types of large-scale manufacturing that was to happen in Cedar Rapids. And this has continued to the current day. And the three major categories that Dave mentions are all personified today in Cedar Rapids manufacturing. From those early beginnings, we're still doing a lot of food processing in Cedar Rapids. It's definitely a major component of what happens. There's been a great history of machinery manufacturing in Cedar Rapids. And tying into the evolution of what's happening in our society, when road making equipment was needed in the early days of the automobile, Cedar Rapids started no less than five companies that made equipment for producing our highways in America. And, of course, we have Rockwell Collins, you know, as a major facility in Cedar Rapids producing electronics and avionics components. And so there was always a diversification, trying to have as many representative manufacturing institutions in Cedar Rapids representing many different fields of manufacturing, and always trying to – being aware of the smaller cities in Iowa like, you know, I mean, Cedar Rapids is really kind of population-wise was very much on par with cities like Ottumwa and Clinton and mm-hmm. Waterloo at one point. And Cedar Rapids is always trying to, in the spirit of the community, was always trying to find ways to get a little bit of ahead of those communities.
In fact, wasn't mm-hmm. it the founding fathers 100 years ago planned the streets of Cedar Rapids?
They did.
Looking forward to a great manufacturing future.
Right. There was a gentleman named George Green who was involved in the design and planning process of Cedar Rapids in the early 1840s. And one of the radical things that was done right after the first settlers came was that they had looked at some design problems that had happened in cities east of here, like Galena, like Dubuque, like Chicago. And they thought, you know what? One of the problems is that they don't make wide enough streets when they start designing
the
town.
They're kind of windy and they're small.
Yeah, they're small and the alleys are small. And, you know, and Marion, which is nearby Cedar Rapids, went with that old plan. I mean, if you go to downtown Marion in Linn County, the alleyways and streets are pretty small under downtown, kind of the town square plan. Cedar Rapids made their major road, which was a connector to the Cedar River in those early days and to the county seat of Marion, a very wide street. In fact, the width of the street that was established in 1843, 120 feet in the downtown area, has not yet been changed. It's still the same width it is today in 2012 as it was in the 1840s. And it was just to accommodate in anticipation of successful growth, and which would be fueled by manufacturing development.
Mark Stouffer-Hunter is with us along with Dave Swenson talking about manufacturing in Iowa as part of our summer series this summer. If you'd like to join in our conversation and tell us about manufacturing in your community, what is made in your town? Perhaps you're someone who helps make it. How has that shaped the culture and the personality of your community? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, give us a tweet at IPR Talk. You can also find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. And Mark, if we were to drive around, we talked about the streets of Cedar Rapids. If we were to talk about the buildings, the landmarks, where would you point someone to? What structure would you have them look at to say, there is a landmark of Cedar Rapids manufacturing?
Absolutely. The entire Quaker Oats facility, which is operated by PepsiCo now. But you can't miss it. It's literally a downtown skyline all by itself. I mean, the amount of structures and real estate that it has in downtown Cedar Rapids, the Quaker Oats factories, is the same size as our downtown proper. And all you have to do is smell what's going on in Cedar Rapids, and you can pretty much tell what's being made in Cedar Rapids. You know, when it's Crunchberry Day in Cedar Rapids, it smells like Crunchberries all over downtown Cedar Rapids.
Not only in Cedar Rapids, we could smell it miles away, depending on which way the wind is blowing.
So you almost a first-time visitor almost will invariably ask a question, what is that smell in Cedar Rapids? Well, they're making this today. They're producing that today. So that gives you a very good sense that there's a definite active manufacturing process going on, and the smells change as you move from one section of Cedar Rapids to another. But visibly and architecturally, the Quaker Oats plant, and there are other nearby plants that are close to our city center, the Penford facility, which produces products from corn, and one of the Cargill plants are both very close to the downtown area. So a part of our downtown skyline is definitely the manufacturing. Buildings are certainly a highlight of that, and you can immediately point those out. You can see them from the interstate coming in. There's plumes of smoke coming out of the facilities.
Right.
There's activity going on, and that has been a staple of Cedar Rapids visual landscape since those 1870s. Early development.
Mark Stouffer-Hunter is with us telling us about Cedar Rapids' history in manufacturing. And let's move to the west, further west in the state, to Jim Kirsten. He is Vice President of Development and Government Relations at Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge. Welcome to you, Jim.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
You once represented Fort Dodge in the state legislature. We want to mention that. Tell us about manufacturing, a quick snapshot of manufacturing in Fort Dodge and its history.
Well, Fort Dodge was a thriving hub in the settlement days here in western Iowa due to the intersection of railroads and our commerce. So it has evolved really towards the agriculture manufacturing sector. During the 50s and 60s and 70s, we were very big in meat processing. We had IBP, Hormel, and then a local processor called Gus Glaser. All those plants closed in the early 80s, and so Fort Dodge went through a real deep transition where we lost about 3,000 manufacturing jobs. But slowly but surely, we're coming back. And now recently, we have a 1,600-acre ag industrial park being developed west of Fort Dodge. We have Valero Energy, which is an ethanol plant. We now have Cargill, who is upgrading a facility that was abandoned by Tate and Lyle. They're going to be building and processing grain. I think they're expecting several hundred semi-truckloads of grain a day in there. And then they've already attracted a Korean company that will be manufacturing some products using byproducts from Cargill. And then on the other side of Fort Dodge, on the eastern side, we have Koch Industries. That is a big nitrogen plant. So we have the world's two largest manufacturing companies located here in Fort Dodge. So we feel very confident that our economy is going to continue to grow. They expect in the next 5 to 10 years, just in that ag park alone, that will create 1,500 new very high-paid manufacturing jobs. So things are looking better.
You mentioned in the early 80s, you're pointing to it as a low point in manufacturing in Fort Dodge, losing all of those meatpacking jobs. Prior to that, what would you say was the heyday of manufacturing in Fort Dodge?
I'd say the 60s. You know, 60s and 70s, Fort Dodge was just booming. You know, it had a thriving downtown, and, you know, people were coming in from throughout the regions. You know, it just it really was peaking then, and we just didn't have a vision, I guess, of how does Fort Dodge, how does this region of the state need to look towards the future. And they were kind of slammed in the head when the meatpacking industry decided to consolidate.
Okay. And we want to talk to you in just a moment, Jim Kirsten, about the role of Iowa Central Community College in how it works hand-in-hand with Iowa manufacturing. But first of all, before we have to take a break, I want to go to Karen Eichen. She is Executive Director of Pella Area Development Corporation and Pella Chamber of Commerce, joining us by phone. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Now, of course, if I went up to someone in Iowa on the street and asked, what's the first thing that comes to mind when I say Pella, Iowa? We would say tulips. Some might say windows, doors, other manufacturing. Give us an idea of the length and breadth of manufacturing in and around Pella.
Manufacturing in Pella has been in existence almost as long as the city of Pella itself. Most of our companies, I'm going to say over 90%, are all having roots in an entrepreneurial venture. All of our companies were started either with somebody who had an idea or maybe one or two people and have grown significantly. Today, we are headquarters for Pella Corporation that does make the Pella windows, Vermeer Corporation that is exporting to 65 different countries around the world, all have their roots, you know, in someone's shop, in the garage, or in a small building, and have just really been able to solve problems and create a very economical solution that has really grown their companies over the years.
But what you're describing is the American dream, someone having an idea and making it bigger and employing a lot of people and satisfying a need out in the marketplace. Pella Corporation, you're saying, started like this?
It did. It actually started with two gentlemen that saw an ad in the paper for roll screens. Somebody had an idea, and they actually purchased that company, and it has grown into what we now know today as Pella Windows.
And now, Dave Swenson, I know you've done a lot of work researching manufacturing in Pella. Can you tell us how dependent Pella is on manufacturing, that area?
I sure can. Well, I don't have the report right in front of me, but we've looked at Pella a couple of times. They've asked me to come down and look. And when you think about all of the connections that manufacturing has with the entire Marion County economy, including all of the supplying sectors, and then all of the workers turning around and re-spending their incomes in that region, manufacturing in Marion County, of which Pella is, you know, the big show out there, one of the big shows out there along with Knoxville, explains anywhere from 2/3 to 75% of the area's incomes. One way or the other, 2/3 to 75% of the region's incomes can depend on manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. Karen, how does the manufacturing match up with the tourism in terms of the jobs, the dollars?
In terms of dollars and jobs, manufacturing is going to have the highest percentage of total household income tied directly to that. Tourism will lend itself very nicely to manufacturing, and it's a very nice balance that we are blessed to have in times where the economy is not as good for some sectors of manufacturing. Our tourism is still really strong, and vice versa. When fuel prices are high, tourism is down, we have manufacturing there to kind of balance that out. So they have really been, you know, just the cornerstones of our economy over the years.
An enviable position to have is two strong legs, tourism and manufacturing. When one leg aches a little bit, the other one's there to support things going on. Pat is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Pat dialed 1-866-780-9100. Pat, so what interests you about our conversation today as we focus on manufacturing in Iowa?
Well, I recently moved here from Minneapolis with my family, and they had a strong working relationship between the University of Minnesota and the biomedical School of Engineering there, and commercialization of those ideas within the business community and had a formal program they called the Biotechnology Corridor that really yielded some great startups. And I wondered if University of Iowa or Ames at Iowa State has anything comparable or is in the works that might help guide some of the research that, say, takes place at the University of Iowa Research Laboratories, which I'm familiar with because I have a son down there working in nanotechnology initiatives, where they have some great things going, but I don't see a connection back through the business community in any way here, but maybe that's in process or happening. I just don't realize it.
Okay, Pat, thank you very much. We do have the expertise here to talk about that. We'll talk about it as the Regents Universities. First of all, I know Jim Kirsten will talk about Iowa Central Community College in a minute, but first let's go to Dave Swenson. What can you tell Pat about that? Those type of efforts?
Well, we have several initiatives here at Iowa State University. The most important is called the Center for Industrial Research and Service. It's part of Extension. They have a wide array of professionals that work directly with manufacturing firms to assist them in all dimensions of their operations, whether it's product development or plant operations or personnel, a wide range of activities. The College of Engineering here at Iowa State University also has a very extensive outreach component designed to work directly with firms. Now, up a level, we have technology deployment is one of the primary objectives here at Iowa State University, developing different ways and partnerships to commercialize technology, commercialize processes, and to basically boost the state's productivity and its manufacturing capacity. That's a big part of the preoccupation of the College of Engineering as well as the Center for Industrial Research and Services. And mm-hmm. I can't speak towards the University of Iowa, but here on campus, it is front and center. Manufacturing is one of the very important categories of industrial assistance and outreach.
Dave Swenson, how long have those types of initiatives existed at Ames? Is that a fairly recent development, or are those come online? Did they come online decades ago?
No, decades ago. It's a long-standing relationship, a long-standing series over time. There's another thing called the Manufacturing Extension Partnership. There's money that comes out of the federal government that underwrites the state's efforts in support of manufacturing, just the same way that same kind of money underwrites the state's efforts to do research and or service in support of agriculture.
And what would you say is the importance? How important have those types of linkages between higher education, ISU, and manufacturing in the state been to establishing Iowa as a major manufacturing state?
Well, you have kind of a chicken and egg situation because Iowa is a manufacturing state for a variety of reasons. It's part of our heritage. It's part of our agricultural background and the need to transform those agricultural products into value-added products. We also have this heritage of being very, very creative in machinery and implements and electronics and a wide range of things from Maytag to Pella. And so it was already part of the state's demand for educational content. We used to have industrial education services, as well as the need, of course, for manufacturing engineers and other types of engineering that can be applied to the manufacturing sector. So it is for a long, long, long time, it's been imbued within the state's educational structure.
Dave Swenson, stay with us. We have a great group of people talking about manufacturing in Iowa, its history, its effect on communities in Iowa, the culture, the politics. We want to get to so many aspects when we come back. Perhaps you will join us to talk about manufacturing in your town. 1-866-780-9100. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and Iowa ranks, as we mentioned in the first half hour, in the top 10 states, may be surprising to you, as most dependent on manufacturing, and more than 6,000 manufacturing firms call Iowa their home, representing almost 11% of employment. We're talking this hour about manufacturing in the state as part of our summer series on Iowa towns. A look at how manufacturing has shaped our history, our economy, our education in Iowa communities. Joining us to do that, Dave Swenson of Iowa State University. He's in the Department of Economics. Also with us, Mark Stopher Hunter, a local historian specializing in Cedar Rapids history as a major manufacturing center in the state. Jim Kirsten, Vice President of Development and Government Relations at Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge. And Karen Eichen, Executive Director of the Pella Area Development Corporation and the Pella Chamber of Commerce, joining us. Perhaps you'd like to join our conversation. Tell us about manufacturing in your town. What is made in your town? Perhaps there is a new face of manufacturing that has popped up in your town you'd like to share with us. Perhaps that's where you work. Tell us about what you make in your Iowa community. 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Before the break, Jim Kirsten, we were talking about how education, higher education, often goes hand in hand in sparking manufacturing, continuing to keep manufacturing on the cutting edge, and it certainly does that at Iowa Central Community College. How has manufacturing in the area, in the Fort Dodge area, influenced the Central Community College's mission?
Oh, it's we're tied at the hip, and we are really industry-driven. We have probably over 100 advisory committees for the different programs that we have to make sure that we're keeping our program content up to speed with what the workforce needs are today. But back to the question from the gentleman from Cedar Rapids, he asked about what are we doing in Iowa to bring commercialization of technology and intellectual content from the universities out to the marketplace. And in the last couple of years, you know, what Dr. Swenson said is absolutely true, but recently the state's reorganized the Economic Development Department, and they now have what they call the Iowa Innovation Council that is being led by Ted Crosby, who's Senior Vice President at Monsanto. And what they are trying to do is develop a system so that not only can the technology and intellectual knowledge pass out from the universities, but then tie that into the actual investment capital in Iowa and from around the country. So I think that's something that really will be started to be beefed up over the next year or two. One of the things that they're trying to do is get the legislature to pass some investment tax credits to make it more attractive for risky investments to try to get that capital invested in these companies. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an exciting next step as well.
How do you make sure that the often sometimes theoretical work at colleges and universities is really something that's going to contribute to the furthering of manufacturing, either in terms of products, the types of products, or the efficiency with which they're made?
Well, I think that goes back to some of the things Dr. Swenson said that they're doing at Iowa State. They're trying to bring the practical components to the private sector and then bring those two together and then test them in the marketplace. And then once they're tested, then possibly expand and then have the next Kinsey Manufacturing, the next John Deere. I've been working hard with the legislature and the Economic Development Department for several years to try to figure out a way we can get the mindset of Iowans that we need to have so that they will take the risk to graduate from Iowa Central in a welding program, but then they don't know how to start that welding shop. So we need to really bring those resources together to teach them how they can do that. And I think then we'll grow ourselves out of this recession.
Mm-hmm. Dave Swenson, is that really one of the big problems here, that we don't have the labor, the workforce to meet the industrial needs of the state and the country?
Well, we have a mixed bag of assets and we have a mixed bag of deficits here in Iowa. Recently, manufacturers and other employers as well are complaining, rightfully so, that they cannot find the technically trained people they need for modern manufacturing. Modern manufacturing is more complicated in many instances. As we move to more robot-driven and technology-driven manufacturing processes, we need people that have more problem-solving skills as opposed to ability to lift things or to work on a line. So the human capital component of this is very important. Mm. But we also have another dimension in Iowa. You know, we're really good at making, processing lots of commodities and processes and producing lots of output, but we rank nationally low in the number of engineers, and we rank nationally low in some of the patents that we would be expected to be coming out. And so our innovation quotient, if that would be the correct way to talk about it, is really lower than we need it to be if we are going to continue to be a powerhouse in manufacturing. And that's what the state of Iowa is working very, very hard to try to turn around with its Innovation Council and with its emphasis on advanced manufacturing promotion.
You know, Dr. Swenson, this is Jim. A good example of what to reinforce what you're saying is Webster City just had the Electrolux washer and dryer plant close last year, where they had 2,400 workers at its peak, and they just needed high school education degrees to be able to work in those plants. We now have probably over 500 of them back at Iowa Central, and for them to even get into our biotechnology program or welding, what have you, they have to go back and take remedial math and computer skills because they've never really had to use that. So it's really, we're a real-world transition here, and we've got 100,000 unemployed Iowans in the state, but we can't match them with the jobs that are currently open. So that's why, again, we're working closely with the regents and the community colleges to try to get that problem solved.
And there's also the thing that we have to recognize. Manufacturing makes more things of more value with fewer workers every year. And so modern manufacturing is always going to be making more and yet shedding workers. And so the competition both regionally for workers as well as the competition for specific kinds of talent is going to get keener as time goes on if we're to compete.
Dave Swenson of Iowa State University, Jim Kirsten of Iowa Central Community College. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, as we talk about manufacturing in Iowa this hour. Let's go to Greg in Waterloo. Hi, Greg. What has sparked a comment from you about this conversation?
Well, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a manufacturing town, Apella, and seeing what everything they gave back was, it was amazing how much the Telecorp and Vermeer and Vingorp gave back to the community and to the schools, and were treated their workers very well, and still seeing them grow today. And at one time when the farm crisis was bad, Telecorp was going well, and another time when building was bad, we had Vermeer doing well with the new tools, the new equipment that it was building.
Greg, in Waterloo, you're singing Karen Eichen's tune there. Sing along with him, Karen, if you can. How does Pella's manufacturing shape the community there?
I think he summed it up just wonderfully. We have corporate partners here that are just outstanding. The philosophy that they have to not only financially give back to the community and invest in nonprofits and schools and amenities for not only their workforce, but for overall residents of the community, and then to also encourage their employees to give their time back to the community and really get involved in their community is just something that I am amazed at every day.
Mark Stouffer-Hunter, in Cedar Rapids, where do you see indications of what we're talking about, the impact, the larger impact of industry, manufacturing on a community like Cedar Rapids?
Well, and we have a unique challenge in Cedar Rapids right now because we're recovering from the flood we had 4 years ago. And so we're now seeing the results of a lot of the cultural and community attractions are reopening and have rebuilt after the flood. And we're seeing a lot of these manufacturing companies contributing greatly to the bringing back that quality of life. I mean, Rockwell Collins' name was very prominent in the reopening of the Czech and Slovak Museum this last weekend, for instance.
Well, we talked earlier with Jim Kirsten in Fort Dodge about the ebbs and flows of industry manufacturing in that area. Certainly, Cedar Rapids has had ups and downs, the flood being a major down in recent history. What can you point to as kind of the bright sides, forward-looking new faces of manufacturing in the Cedar Rapids area?
Well, we've seen some recent new faces. It's interesting, and we have a long tradition in Cedar Rapids of building new industry, especially recently on the sites of where there had been closed or failed industry before. And we've seen the recent opening of the Clipper wind turbine manufacturing facility on the old Goss plant site on Bowling Street in southwest Cedar Rapids. And that's a new manufacturing process that we're seeing that's changing the landscape of Iowa with the wind turbines. We have a lip balm factory in Cedar Rapids, which is just about ready to open up on an old Alice Chalmers industrial site on First Avenue in East Cedar Rapids. And that started very small in the New Bohemia district, and they were flooded. They were destroyed practically 4 years ago, and they've not only come back, they've come back really strong, and they got a lot of initial early publicity by Mr. Shriver of the Raining Rose Company, appeared on the David Letterman show, really got that product promoted nationally, and manufacturing just soared after that. So, and again, that continued diversification of manufacturing products. You know, it's not just enough to have an oatmeal factory or radio avionics. You know, why not make lip balm in Cedar Rapids too? Why not? So,
Let's go to Muscatine. Mike is joining us from Muscatine. Mike, I bet you want to talk about manufacturing in your town.
Well, when I moved here 33 years ago from Arizona, I wanted a small town. I was coming home to Iowa, and I was a school teacher. I wanted good education, but I also wanted a town that had a diverse economy. I had been living in a mining town in Arizona, and I knew how fragile that economy could be. Muscatine, a town of under 24,000 at that time, had Stanley Engineering, Carver Pump, Monsanto, Heinz, GPC, Camp Feed, and on and on and on. And I just loved the idea that I could have a small town with a really resilient, diverse economy and a diverse culture as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining our conversation. Mike, in Muscatine, we talked about, you know, sort of a balancing act, isn't it, Mark, between celebrating the past traditions of manufacturing and moving forward to lip balm or wind turbines and so forth. Talk about historic preservation, because you don't want to just demolish the past, do you?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a real challenge, because you want to move forward and have the ideas of progress moving forward, and you don't want to be stuck in the past as far as even visually in your community. And so that is a challenge. But what I liked about the opening of the lip balm factory, when they started construction on that last September, they actually brought in an old Alice Chalmers piece of equipment to move the first shovel full of dirt. And they invited all the former employees of this plant that hadn't been on the site over there in 40 years. And it was a great link of the past workers, you know, joining in the celebration of a new era of manufacturing for Cedar Rapids. So I think as long as there's an appropriate nod and communication with the historic past of manufacturing in Iowa communities with their future, and there's a respect for it, because I think the same spirit that existed in the past with these companies still exists today.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that the community embraces?
Absolutely, absolutely, because it ties in so much to the identity of that community. You know, the spirit behind the manufacturing development and interest is very much in tune with the spirit of the people of the community.
Jim Kirsten, up there in Fort Dodge, what can you tell us about how the past can mix with the present and into the future?
Well, a good example is, you know, we had the Hormel meatpacking plant along the Des Moines River, and that was a real industrial area and had our rail yards down there and what have you. Now that's been turned into a green space. We also then were able to have Fort Dodge Animal Health take one of their facilities that was fairly new and retrofit it. Now they have a biologic manufacturing facility there making animal biologics. So we've gone from the old age ag manufacturing to the biotech and bioprocessing. And, you know, that goes back to the gentleman, again, from Cedar Rapids. The Des Moines area is looking at a group, or they've created a group called CapitalCrossroadsVision.com, and they've developed a plan to try to bring a biotech coordinator corridor from Kansas City up to Ames. But we're going to try to extend that even up to Fort Dodge, because we have Boehringer Ingelheim that bought Fort Dodge Animal Health. That is the world's largest animal pharmaceutical company. So we really have a lot of synergies in ag-related and biotech and bioprocessing. So, I feel very confident about the future.
Dave Swenson, let's have you chime in about the future. When you look at the state here, can you identify some trends that exist now that will continue and perhaps grow into the future?
Well, building on what Jim just talked about, Iowa's prominence in biotechnology research related to both crops and animal stands out. And so we have great opportunities for manufacturing development in those types of areas. We're going to see continued growth, consolidation of the processing of agricultural products at that high levels. We're going to see probably more industrial clusters like what they have in Cedar Rapids. That's that food and agricultural products processing capacity that's up there. What's emerging in Fort Dodge right now, it's just getting started, but it's consolidating itself. We're going to see those types of things. I expect over time to see strong relationships between, for example, Cedar Rapids and the University of Iowa, and that incredible population of engineers that are there that can apply their skills in partnership with the scientific community at the University of Iowa from all manner of territory, to include medical engineering as well as instruments, as well as a wide variety of relatively sophisticated processes. Manufacturing is always going to be important. It's still important in all of our metropolitan areas. 45% of all manufacturing jobs are in our bigger cities. Mm-hmm. So it's always going to be a great and important part of Iowa's economy. But over time, it's always going to be a slightly smaller part of Iowa's economy because the rest of the economy is going to grow more rapidly.
Dave Swenson, I don't think we can talk about manufacturing as a topic without talking about outsourcing. And a lot of talk in recent years about the outsourcing of manufacturing jobs in Iowa, across the country. How much has Iowa suffered from manufacturing jobs going to other states, other countries?
We have suffered less than the national average, and it's kind of hard to put your hands around it. But if you imagine from 1999 on, we lost manufacturing jobs. We had the dot-com bust. We lost a lot of our technology production. We lost a lot of our computer production. But we lost a wide array of manufacturing jobs moving overseas. What Iowa made was less prone to be outsourced, and so we lost fewer. So our relative position nationally actually improved. What we make, more than half of it is sold here in North America, and so our markets are primarily local, what we make. So to a certain degree, we weren't as impinged upon as the national average. But that said, we lost lots of factories.
Let me quickly, before we end the hour, give the picture on that outsourcing from Karen Eichen in Pella. Has that been something that has affected you as well?
Not so much outsourcing. We're fortunate to be in a position where our countries actually export and have been able to take advantage and capture some markets that are outside of the United States.
So can you tell us how much of, for instance, Pella's business goes outside of the country? I mean, is the manufactured, made by hands here in Iowa, found in Europe or Asia or Africa?
I wish I could give you an exact figure. Vermeer Corporation is going to export quite a bit more than Pella Corporation. But they have been able to take advantage of some very prominent up and growing markets that have a lot of room for growth and are going to continue to be strong for them.
Jim Kirsten, in closing, what do you see in the future?
Perhaps? Well, up here we did lose the Electrolux manufacturing to Mexico. They did move that plant operation down there. So we, as a college, along with the other 14 community colleges, have applied for what they call a Trade Act federal grant that will be used to, if we get the funding, and we'll know this fall, to help implement the National Career Readiness Certificate. It's a portable certificate that assures manufacturers if a person has a certain level of training in this National Career Readiness Certificate, in welding, for example, they will be assured that this person has skills. So, again, I think Iowa is really in the process of retooling. We're lucky we have a strong ag economy, and I think hopefully we'll be able to continue to see that growth in the future.
We started off with a history of manufacturing in Iowa. Perhaps we can bookend this program by turning to you, Mark, and having you talk about, we talked about the innovative, the individual that can make the difference. That was the case in one of the largest manufacturers in Cedar Rapids, Rockwell Collins.
Yeah, Rockwell Collins, really. Arthur Collins, in innovations that he had. You can still visit the house that he grew up in. There's just still some wires on the wall in the attic of this old house. He toyed around the radial components and contacted Admiral Byrd at the South Pole. And it's just that spirit that he had that allowed Cedar Rapids to, believe in that company in the early days to have a radio factory during the Great Depression, which really helped Cedar Rapids ride that economic downturn. Mm-hmm. And it's just that is another example of the other ones we've heard from the other people today of that great Iowa spirit of innovation. And I don't think that's going away for our future. I think it's our history will stay with us in the future as far as that type of spirit of innovation.
Can you tell us the impact that Rockwell Collins has on, in terms of size? People may not realize that the jobs.
It's been a consistent, continuing growth job source. And they're actually at a point now where they're starting to rent space in Cedar Rapids in buildings that used to be used for something else. That happened during World War II, where they took over a lot of the empty space that we had downtown. So they're starting to see them all over town because they're growing so quickly. And we've had a statistic for a long time that there were more engineers living in Cedar Rapids per capita population than anywhere else, sometimes even in the world. So it's a major component of Cedar Rapids identity.
Dave Swenson, can I give you the last few seconds to wrap our show up on manufacturing?
Yeah, sure. Well, I want to make sure that everybody understands manufacturing is always going to be an important and vital part of the Iowa economy. A lot of times people think that manufacturing is just going to disappear, and they're wrong.
Okay. Dave Swenson, associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. Mark Stopher Hunter, local historian specializing in Cedar Rapids history. Jim Kirsten, vice president of development and government relations at Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge, and also Karen Eichen, the executive director of the Pella Area Development Corporation and Pella Chamber of Commerce. It's been a delight to have you all with us this hour to talk about manufacturing in Iowa. I learned a lot of things that I didn't know about manufacturing in Iowa, and I'm sure our listeners did. Thank you all.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Jeff Schmidt. He is also the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River, available at iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for joining us for this look at manufacturing in Iowa. I'm Ben Kiefer.
Factory whistle blows, man rises from bed and puts on his clothes. Man takes his lunch, walks out in the morning light. It's a work, a work, it's a working life. Through the mansions of fear, through the mansions of pain, see my daddy walking towards them factory gates in the rain. Factory takes his hearing, but he understands.